Support for Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom is brought to you by Manscaped. Thanks to listener participation over the last several months, Manscaped has been kind enough to sponsor the podcast. As long as people continue using our promo code SUNNYINKC to get 20% off their entire orders. So thanks to everyone who's helped us out so far. This is incredible. Check out this suggested intro for the ad read. With live sports being back, it's very possible that we may see an NBA playoff matchup between the Clippers and the Nuggets. So our partners at Manscaped want to make sure your Nuggets are safe as possible when they meet the Clippers. Ah, what wordplay, that's great. But for real, it's been amazing to be partners with them. I've been super impressed with their products. Per their ad copy, Manscaped is here to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. The Lawnmower 3.0 is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced. They actually just released their Shears 2.0 nail kit, which is the perfect add-on to their lawnmower trimmer. The Shears 2.0 is a luxury four-piece nail kit featuring tempered stainless steel tools, and it includes slash-tipped tweezers, rounded point scissors, fingernail clippers, and a medium grit nail file. So get 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code SUNNYINKC at manscaped.com and take your grooming game to the next level. Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
So I was talking to my brother, and I guess he listens to the show. I know you have brothers as well. I have a younger brother. I have a younger sister also. I'm the oldest of three. My sister's 3 years younger than me, and my brother's 6 years younger than me. And he was never really super into sports because I was never really super into sports when we lived in the same household. That was really more of like a kind of my college days that I really got into sports, but he was very into gaming. And so that was our big thing, you know, like we weren't competing against each other in sports, but we were very competitive. Yes. Very competitive in the esports realm. And I was thinking about this weekend apropos of nothing when, you know, I was thinking back to my peak probably as a gamer when I was probably, you know, 20 or 21. That's like kind of your mm-hmm. peak years. When I was in college, you know, I was on my own. I had my own, you know, my own schedule. If I didn't want to go to class and I wanted to play video games all day,
right,
I could do that. And so that my brother Reed would have been around 14, 15 at this time. And this was the year 2007 that Command & Conquer 3 came out. And we were big RTS, real-time strategy gamers. So what I remember vividly about this game was when we first bought it, like I would, you know, like I'd been playing, like Reed probably started like playing video games, computer games against me when he was probably like 6 or 7, you know, he was terrible.
Sure.
Because yeah. Your motor six. Skills aren't very developed. Your yeah. brain's not developed.
You're not
like,
good at anything at that
yeah,
age.
You're not good at anything. And so he was finally starting to get, you know, you get in your early teenage years and, you know, this is back in 2007, you know, before we reached the peak gaming culture that we have now. But still, you know, you're starting to get competitive. And so we got this game and we used to play it online. And I remember there was this unit called the Flame Tank. And I used to just kill him hard every game with the Flame Tank. I would Flame Tank rush him. I remember I had like a streak where I like Flame Tank rushed him like 9 or 10 games in a row,
and I couldn't do anything about it.
I killed him in like 5 minutes every single game. And like I would do it, there would be like slight variations on it, like, you know, your little war factory or whatever you build your Flame Tanks around. Sometimes I would proxy it. That's the gamer lingo for when you build it like in a secret location on the map.
Right.
Like you send out a little worker guy to build it like in a corner where he doesn't know it's coming. And then, you know, you got Flame Tanks coming in from the back of your base, burning all your buildings to the ground. And I don't remember when this streak ended, but eventually, you know, like eventually your baby brother takes one off of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels bad, man. Like mm-hmm. it feels bad. But then the game after that, you're like, man, I'm going to beat that ass.
I think I see where you're going with this. Before we kind of bring this whole thing around to home, I want to share a similar story with my not little brother, who I'm only 2 years older than, and we were very competitive in our video games, but I never really had a huge advantage on him. But who I did have a huge advantage on was our cousin, who is, I guess, 5 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And loved Madden, and he loved watching my little brother Todd and I play Madden because it was always competitive and it was fun and high scoring, and so he always wanted to play with us. But I mean, bless his heart, kid just was too young, and we would not go easy on him at all, at all. I mean, it would be 70 something to nothing. And it was kind of like we wanted to get back to playing each other. So we would just crush him into oblivion until there was nothing left. He did, however, grow up, and now he like runs an esports league. And last time we played Madden at a Christmas, like 3 years ago, he had been waiting for this game for like 15
his whole life.
He absolutely trashed me. He was running manual, like players manually on defense. He was doing all kinds of stuff that was way above my league. And so, Blake, if you're listening, shout out to you for leveling up above me in video games. But at one point, I had you every time.
Welcome in, everybody, to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. We are recording this on a Thursday night instead of our usual Wednesday night. We held off another night because the city around me is threatening to burn to the ground, and I'm back in court every day, and I get like 5 hours of sleep every night. But you know what? We are here with another episode, and Taylor, breaking news tonight.
We got him.
We got him. The Chiefs signed the recently released Le'Veon Bell, former running back for the Adam Gase Jets. He is now a Chief on a one-year deal. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, very briefly, because we want to put it in the past, the baby brother Raiders taking their one game off of us. And then we're going to preview this upcoming matchup between the Chiefs and the Bills, which is going to be played on a Monday afternoon. Very strange world that we're living in here, Taylor. But first, let's just get it out of the way. Let's just talk about, I mean, 5 minutes tops.
Sure, but sure.
So the Raiders came to Arrowhead this past weekend, an Arrowhead that featured, you know, a 15% or whatever capacity crowd. They beat the Chiefs in a game where the Chiefs, frankly, played fairly poorly. The officiating was terrible. And the Raiders won this game, and they won it by one score, 8 points. Taylor, your thoughts?
They played the game in an unusual fashion for the Raiders, and it caught the Chiefs by surprise. They actually threw the ball deep. And clearly the secondary for the Chiefs, which who had been playing magnificently for the first four games of the year, absolutely were locked in. They were a top pass defense. And then they just kept losing guys. They lost Henry Ruggs. They lost Nelson Aguilar. They lost Darren Waller. They just weren't sound. And the Raiders were beating them over the top, which is something that, as all of us who have trashed on Derek Carr, rightfully so, since 2014, are aware of, he doesn't beat people over the top. He's gun shy. He just is a dinkin' and dunker. And he went out in this game, and this was, his life was on the line. This was just an ordinary game for the Chiefs, but for the Raiders, it meant absolutely the world. It was their Super Bowl, no question about it. And he, to his credit, performed in a way that Derek Carr in Arrowhead has never performed before, which is like a capable starting quarterback in the NFL. And you're right, the lack of crowd probably played a factor in there, because normally he's very rattled. He throws a lot of picks. He just plays horribly in Arrowhead. And that wasn't quite the case on Sunday. But at the end of the day, the Raiders got him. The Raiders played a perfect game. The Chiefs played a D game, and the Raiders won by 8. Congratulations, Oakland. I'm still going to call you Oakland. Good job, I guess.
Yeah, what makes this game so frustrating, and again, we're not going to spend very much time on this, but the Chiefs got worked by the Raiders in areas that they should not have gotten worked by the Raiders. So obviously Derek Carr beating them over the top. Now listen, Henry Ruggs, pretty good player. He was coming off an injury. He had been out for a few games. But Derek Carr threw some pretty good deep passes in this game, which is not something that Derek Carr typically does. And so obviously whenever you're game planning for an opponent, you're playing tendencies, and you saw it 2 weeks ago when they played the Patriots. The Patriots are double teaming his checkdowns.
And he had no answer.
And he had no answer for it. And then this week, he came out and torched the Chiefs over the top. And on the other side of the ball, the Chiefs' offensive line got worked in this game by a pretty bad Raiders pass rush. That, to me, was the frustrating part of the game. Like, if Derek Carr is going to throw deep, you know, with in front of 13,000 people at Arrowhead or whatever, and that's their game plan to beat the Chiefs, fine. You know, like, occasionally maybe he'll get lucky if that's how you want to play, right? Like, maybe he'll hit one or two passes over the top, which he did in this game, and got some help from the referees too. But man, the Chiefs offensive line just got worked in this game. I don't know if it was, you know, health, obviously losing Kelechi Osemele in this game, probably bad for the season, for the season, let's just say it. He like tore both of his knees in this game. Bad loss. I don't know if it was Patrick Mahomes, you know, drifting too far back in the pocket, what it was, but man, I did not expect a Raiders pass rush that features who even pass rushes for the Raiders. Cleveland Max, Farrell, you know, Max, yeah, Crosby. Max Crosby, yeah, with two X's.
Meh.
I don't know. It wasn't a good game, Taylor. It wasn't a good game.
No, it wasn't. You know, we're just gonna, it happens. It broke a ton of streaks for the Chiefs, like a ton of them.
I just want to close it out, though, to circle back to our introduction. The thing that turned me around on this game, because I'll be frank with you, Taylor, this game basically ruined my whole weekend. And sure. It just was awful to lose to the Raiders in the way that we lost to them. Was extremely frustrating, and it made me very, very, very angry. But then on Monday afternoon, I saw this tweet from Nick Jacobs, and it turned my whole perspective around. Per one of my contacts, the Raiders requested the police. I can't even read it without laughing. The Raiders requested the police escort allow them to, quote, take a victory lap, end quote, around Arrowhead Stadium in the team buses before they headed up to the airport.
Sad.
The Raiders won a regular season game in front of a virtually empty Arrowhead Stadium by 8 points in week 5, and they wanted to take a victory lap around the stadium in their buses. All right. I mean, like, this was baby brother getting his first win in Madden or Red Alert or Command and Conquer, StarCraft, whatever it is, mm-hmm. against Big Brother, right? And I'm telling you, when the Chiefs play the Raiders again, they are going to humiliate them. They are going to crush them. It is going to be brutal. It's going to be ugly. The Raiders are going to wish that they had never been born. We can move on.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Le'Veon Bell. It's fun. It's exciting. He's a new piece. There's something that I have seen go around a lot recently, which is some hope for people that have thought that Le'Veon has kind of lost a step or two in his older age. And that is, and by the way, he's 28. I mean that in the fact that since his days with the Steelers, he has not performed with the Jets. There have been a lot of talk of the players that have left Adam Gase's genius coaching, that apparently he's some sort of mastermind, which I've never seen in play out on the football field. But I just want to go through some players and talk about their time with Adam Gase and their time after Adam Gase.
This is going to be good. I have thoughts on this. Yep.
Yeah. So we'll start with a player that you and I have a lot of interesting discussions with in general, and that's Jarvis Landry, current wide receiver for the Browns. Trash. Garbage. Wide receiver. Absolutely terrible. Trash. Was featured heavily in the Dolphins offense.
Yes, in the Adam Gase trash offense.
Right.
This is going to be the only player on this list that was better with Adam Gase.
Sure.
And maybe he wasn't even that
and
much
it's
better.
Not even really.
As a fantasy player, because Adam Gase ran his entire offense through a slot receiver that runs like a 4.8.
Right, which is says as much about Adam Gase as it does Jarvis Landry. So
yeah, now he's doing it with Jamison Crowder.
Right. So with stats with Adam Gase, in 32 games, Jarvis Landry had 206 catches for 2,100 yards, 10 yards a catch, 13 touchdowns. And without or after Adam Gase, 35 games, about the same sample size, 185 catches, 2,430 yards, so more yards. He's at 13 yards per reception instead of 10, has 10 touchdowns, and basically, despite not being the focal point of the offense like he was in Miami, he is the similar production as the wide receiver two with the Browns. Just goes to show that
he probably second wide receiver on another team. 300 fewer targets.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just ridiculous. So we'll go on to one of the quarterbacks that was throwing to him in his days in Miami, Ryan Tannehill. Everybody knows Ryan Tannehill. He is now the Titans starting quarterback. In 24 games in Miami with Adam Gase, Ryan Tannehill threw 36 touchdowns to 21 picks for 5,000 yards. And in 16 games, so two-thirds of the games, he has 31 touchdown passes compared to 36, and only 7 picks compared to 21, wow, and 3,750 yards passing. So he's increased his yards per game about 25. He's way cut down on his interceptions. His touchdown pace is way outstripping what it was. He's just a much, much, much better quarterback. Took the Titans to the AFC Championship game. Looks like one of the, a great story of someone that leaves Adam Gase. We're going to move on to Jay Ajayi, who was a running back with the Dolphins under Adam Gase. And when he was traded to the Dolphins, traded to the Eagles from the Dolphins, in 22 games with Gase, he had 1,700 yards and 8 touchdowns. And then in 14 games after, he had 600 yards and 4 touchdowns. Paces there are about equal, but Jay Ajayi was definitely a more effective back in Philadelphia than he was in Miami. Moving on real quick. Mike Gesicki. Really good tight end for the Dolphins these days.
He is great.
He is a stud young tight end. Like him a lot. He played a whole year under Adam Gase in 2018. Had 22 catches for 200 yards, no touchdowns, 12 yards a game. Meh. In 21 games since, zero touchdowns.
That's almost
for a tight end. You always target the tight end in the red zone, as you'll find great. In the 21 games since. He has a nice 69 receptions for 850 yards at 12 yards a catch, 7 touchdowns and 40 yards a game. So he is an entirely new player. I mean, Mike Gesicki is a weapon, and he was an afterthought with Adam Gase.
But of course he was an afterthought. They were too busy throwing it to Jarvis Landry. Exactly. Jarvis Landry was in Cleveland, but you get my point. They were trying to find a replacement for Jarvis Landry.
Yes, 3 players left. DeVante Parker, really, really good offensive weapon, in my opinion, for Miami these days. He's their best wide receiver. In 39 games with Adam Gase, 137 catches, 1,700 yards, 6 touchdowns, 44 yards a game. Blech. In 21 games, so about half the games, he has 98 receptions compared to 137, 1,530 yards compared to 1,700 yards, and 11 touchdowns compared to 6 at 70 yards a game. So DeVante Parker is a whole new man. I mean, I'm sure Adam Gase leaving the Dolphins probably made DeVante Parker $20 million. I mean, he is as thankful as anybody that Adam Gase has gone. We all know Kenyon Drake's story. He was a running back, kind of a afterthought, bad running back with the Dolphins. They flipped him to Arizona last year, and he became this monster in Arizona that was scoring touchdowns. Barreling towards us. In 48 games under Adam Gase, 48 games, 4 whole years, 16, 17, 18, 19, he had 1,300 yards rushing, which is only 28 yards a game, and he had 9 touchdowns in 48 games. Then in 19 games since, with the Cardinals, 1,100 yards compared to 13, 59 yards a game compared to 28, and 10 touchdowns compared to 9. So in less than half, in about a third of the games, he hit the yardage mark that he hit in 48 games. He outscored him. I mean, Kenyon Drake also looks like a completely different back outside of Miami. I mean, that's a no-brainer there. Finally, Robbie Anderson. Poor Robbie Anderson. Spent 2019 on the Jets and was exciting and fun. He's a speedster. He had his moments. He had, in 16 games, he had 52 receptions for 780 yards, 5 touchdowns, about 50 yards a game. Pretty decent for a Jets wide receiver. In only 5 games with the Carolina Panthers since then, after he left Adam Gase, 36 receptions for 489 yards at 97 yards a game. So, I mean, Robbie Anderson is now one of the yardage leaders in the NFL in receiving through five games of the year. And clearly you can already tell the trend that's been the same trend for all the other guys is going to hold true with Robbie Anderson, that the moment he gets out of the grasp of Adam Gase, he blossoms and he turns into the player that everybody always knows he could be. And that just brings us all back to Le'Veon Bell. And it's just one of those situations where he was amazing in Pittsburgh. He comes to the Jets. And even though he wasn't good with the Jets, he still managed to rack up 1,250 all-purpose yards last year on the Jets. And now he gets to leave Adam Gase. He gets to leave the least talented roster in football and come to the most talented roster in football. And that's
it's the best play caller in football and the best quarterback in football. I just wanted to point out some numbers from Pat Thorman, who normally is not worth your time, frankly. He's annoying. But he tweets this, which I think is instructive. Le'Veon Bell's average yards before initial contact with the Steelers, 1.75 yards before contact is okay. What he was averaging. So that's what his offensive line was giving him to work
gets
with.
Gets past the line of scrimmage, gets 2 yards past before anybody even really messes with him. Yep.
The Jets were giving him 0.58 yards
before
contact. Ugh. Now, his forced to miss tackles per touch, so the amount of times he's making people miss per touch.
Mm-hmm.
Steelers 0.2, so one missed tackle every five touches.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Jets, it was 0.19, so okay. It's essentially the same.
So he's the same guy.
He doesn't quite have – now, he's never had elite top-end speed. He's actually very similar to Clyde in that way.
Yeah.
You know, I think he ran a 4.6 40 or something like that. But, you know, he can make guys miss. And I think his versatility, I mean, once he gets behind, now I'm not going to say that the Chiefs offensive line has been incredibly impressive this year, because it is not, especially with Osimile out, which is a huge loss because he was playing really, really well. But Bell's versatility, his ability to split out wide, just gives the Chiefs a lot of flexibility. And he's great in pass protection. He's a very good pass blocker. That's going to give the Chiefs the ability to use him on third down, use him all over the formation. It's going to be a good fit, assuming he can kind of come in and pick up the playbook. But the Chiefs are definitely excited to have him.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's just another – some people have been saying it's like Shady McCoy last year. I'm not in that boat. I think that Le'Veon will have a bigger impact on the offense than what Shady had last year. But it's the same type of story where the Chiefs know they need to shore some depth up in the running back room, and they bring in a veteran, they bring in a guy that's been an all pro, and it's not going to hurt. It's just not going to hurt. And anyone who was worried about this signing, you know, I don't really think the character issues with Le'Veon are anything to really give smoke to. I think that it was a lot of contract stuff. It was a lot of professional stuff. He wasn't, you know, a detriment to the Jets locker room in any way, from what I can tell. I mean, I'm super excited about it. I think it's going to be a lot.
Yeah. And two things that I want to add to that. Number one, he is now playing for a contract, and the contract year, as Therese Paylor likes to say,
is undefeated. Yeah.
Is undefeated.
Yeah.
And he's only 28. I mean, when LeSean McCoy was here last year, LeSean McCoy was 31, excuse me. And, you know, Le'Veon sat out a year too, and he's had some injuries in his career. So the tread on the tires is totally different between the two of those. Le'Veon has, in his career, 1,874 touches. So that would be receptions plus carries.
Yep.
LeSean McCoy, when he came to the Chiefs, had about 2,800. So like 1,000 more touches for LeSean McCoy, despite only a 3-year age difference than Le'Veon Bell. I mean, we're talking about a good 30% more touches in his career than LeSean McCoy had, than Le'Veon has now when he comes to the Chiefs. So, and you know, frankly, I mean, he's only appeared in 2 games this year with the Jets. He's only gotten 22 touches all year. So he's been dealing with some minor injuries. He's been banged up. He doesn't have the best injury history in his career. But if he can come in and pick up the playbook a little bit, he's going to make an impact. Now, he cannot play this week, unfortunately, because he has to clear COVID protocol. And that brings us, Taylor, to the weekly COVID news segment.
News. It's more of a blah.
News. Yeah, so there's just a little bit of COVID news this week so far. We're recording this on Thursday.
Yeah.
the Falcons had another positive test. That's their fourth positive test of the year. But it sounds like they're going to be able to play. Now, this was a big week in Corona news because the Patriots-Broncos game got postponed to this week. It just got pushed back a week, mm-hmm. which means the Broncos now no longer get a bye. This was their bye, except they already worked through, you know, all but 1 or 2 days of it prepping to play a game. So they didn't really get a bye, and now they're not going to get a bye. Sucks to suck. I mean, when you're a bad team, the NFL doesn't really push you around to make accommodations for you, and that's what we're dealing with the Broncos.
Yeah.
And then the Bills-Titans game, the Titans finally got a game in after weeks of positive tests in their facility on a Tuesday, and they blew out the Bills. We now play with more rest. We're going to have to play the Bills, you know, 3 days, travel to Buffalo. Now the Chiefs are playing them on Monday afternoon, and the Bills are actually going to get less rest for this game than the Chiefs are.
Yeah, the Chiefs have 2 days on them because we played Sunday and they played Tuesday.
Yep. But the COVID news this week appears to be positive. The Chiefs did have a strength trainer test positive.
Watch how you use positive there.
The Chiefs did have a positive test among their training staff, but it seems like the Chiefs, unlike, say, the Titans, have followed protocol to the letter. I mean, we've had now two positive tests confirmed within the Chiefs, or three, I guess, because of Anthony Sherman.
Yeah,
he didn't test positive.
No, he was in close contact with someone who did.
Or, you know, as I tweeted out, the virus was exposed to Anthony Sherman. He was placed on the COVID list because of possible close contact.
COVID is sausage positive.
Exactly right. It doesn't sound like he actually has had a positive test yet. The Chiefs had one with Jordan Te'amu and one with the strength coach. But even with two positives, you know, in the building, around the building, it hasn't spread. It isn't a Titan situation. They haven't allowed it to, you know, kind of gather unchecked. And that's a good sign that the Chiefs are doing what they need to do. I mean, even with the Patriots, obviously it was just Newton and Stephon Gilmore and Bill Murray.
Bill Murray, of course.
Talked about him last week. But even they couldn't keep it from spreading to two of their star players. The Chiefs have kept their star players healthy, and they've kept them away from the COVID. And that's all we really can ask for in 2020.
And I think we're seeing the difference between, you know, the NFL was prepared for individuals to get it. They were the whole time. They expanded the practice rosters and they have all the contact tracing. They're ready for single cases. What they were not prepared to handle was an entire team getting it. That was something that they figured that they, as long as teams followed the protocols, there would not be these massive positives that the Titans had. So clearly, because the Titans didn't follow protocols, that's what threw the whole season into question and all that stuff. As long as people follow the rules, it's going to be all right. We're going to have football.
Yep. So before we get into the Bills preview, we did want to answer a mailbag question. As always, this is a good opportunity for us to plug our Discord server. You can DM Taylor on Twitter at Taylor Witts. Shoot him a message if you want to be invited to our Discord server. This comes from one of our favorite Birds of War, James McGregor, Mack Truck. Now that we have an announcement that Patrick and Brittany are going to be parents, I wonder what kind of a father do you think Pat will be? Maybe like his dad was taking him out to hang out in locker rooms and play around on NFL fields. Could it be possible that if it's a boy, Pat trains him to be a wide receiver and plays long enough that someday his son could be a Chiefs wide receiver who he throws passes to, or maybe a running back who he hands off to and protects his dad in pass pro?
I love this.
What do you think about this, Taylor? I mean, it's a great question. It's a fascinating question.
It's very heartwarming, James. I think number one, what kind of father do you think Pat will be? I think that's a very easy answer. I think he will be the best father he's capable of being, which, as far as I can tell, seems to be a damn good one. I mean, if it's like anything else in his life, he's going to excel at it because that's all he's done. And I think that he's already answered a little bit of this this week. Somebody asked him if he would prefer his kid to grow up and play football or baseball. And he just said, I just want my kid to do whatever it is that makes them happy and do it to the best of their ability, which is just as slam dunk of an answer as you can give. I mean, that's what Pat's whole life has been about, doing the right thing and doing it the right way. And I just think this will be a situation where, he's probably going to be extremely successful at raising his kid. And I think that I really like the thought of him being a non-quarterback, his son, because I just assumed that if it was a son that played for the Chiefs, that he would be a quarterback. And the day that Mahomes Sr. retired, the next game would be started by Mahomes Jr.
Right.
Or I guess Mahomes the second and Mahomes the third. But it's fun to think of them kind of griffying it up, both out there on the same team, both, you know, both killing the game. That'd be really fun. I'm not sure Pat's got the speed in his DNA to be a wide receiver. Brittany's probably pretty fast, but I feel like if he's going to train his son to be a football player, he probably would train him to be a really good defender because he'd be out there throwing against him. He'd grow up playing football against his dad. And I just feel like it would be like a more like a cornerback situation if it's a non-quarterback.
Yeah, I was just looking this up, and I don't think there's ever been a father-son duo that has played at the same time in the NFL. You'd almost have
Frank
to have
Gore almost has it. His son is in college.
That's very true, actually.
His son's running back Frank in college.
Frank Gore could be the first one to time do stone. It. Frank Gore will steal his son's job.
Yeah.
And, you know, his son will be the yeah. rookie draft pick coming
right.
in. And Frank Gore will sign midway through the season to take his son's job.
It's wild that there's an NFL team with the starting quarterback of Joe Flacco and the starting running back of Frank Gore
in
2020.
That is your 2020 New York Jets.
Woof.
I think so it would be unprecedented. You would basically have to have one of them, the older one, would have to play a position where you can have a lot of longevity, like quarterback.
Yeah.
Where you're not getting hit, or, you know, like kicker. A special teamer. Yeah, a punter or a kicker. You know, the Colquitts came pretty close,
yeah.
I would imagine. I'm sure Colquitt's oldest kids are probably pretty close. Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely could do it. I would prefer, I mean, my ultimate preference would be, like you said, for Pat 2 to hand off the ball to Pat 3. Like Pat 3 comes in for a year. He's the backup quarterback for a year. Can you imagine like them being on the bench together? That'd be a lot of fun. We actually did get a little bit of an athletic profile. I think I shouted this episode out when it happened, but BJ Kissel, when he was still with the Chiefs, did a great interview with Bobby Stroop, who's Pat's longtime trainer mm-hmm. down in Texas, who's a great follow on Twitter. But he actually gave a great interview about Pat's natural athleticism. Like, it was a very honest interview. Like, these are the things that his body is naturally good at, and these are the things that we sort of train into him. And he's also trained Brittany this whole time as well, because they've been together, obviously, since high school. So he's trained Brittany as an athlete, too. And he said, you know, just in terms of their natural ability, I think he said that Brittany has, like, way more natural speed than Patrick
sure.
does.
Sure.
She's a top tier athlete in her own right. So, I mean, you know, I don't know a lot about, say, the Mannings, for example. Like, the Mannings are, you know, they've got their football dynasty. Clay Matthews, that family's got a long tradition, obviously, like the Bosas. But
Nicole
to be
Coates.
Honest with you, I don't know that any of the mothers in there were bringing a whole lot to the table athletically. I don't know that for a fact, but it's obviously it's the fathers, you know, that played in the league, obviously had the natural athleticism, the genes played at an NFL level. It would actually be pretty crazy. And I Patrick's mom, I don't know that she has any kind
of
professional athletic
much of a history.
She doesn't seem like much of an athlete, but Brittany is a very good athlete in her own right, and obviously has served as his trainer. Whatever his son ends up doing, if it's anything athletically, be it curling or basketball or, you know,
curling,
water polo, whatever it would be, he's going to be great at it, or she is going to be great at it. And,
yeah.
you know, they probably won't stop at one. So there could be a whole squad out there. He could do the Phillip Rivers situation and he could have, you know, what would be fun is if he spaced them out, like maybe a year and a half apart, he could just have a whole team of them, not play with him necessarily, but play with each other. Right. Like they could all
yeah.
come up together.
Yeah.
You know, all the Pats throwing to each other, basically. You know, you could be like in Madden.
This is so adorable.
Yeah, you just have like five or six Pat Mahomeses on the field at the same time, like Pats 4 through 8 or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a great question, James. It was fun to kind of live that out. And you know, 20 years from
maybe
now.
Maybe someday we will.
We're going to see it.
Yep.
So Let's hop into this
the Beals.
Bills preview, Taylor. The Beals. For those of you that don't get that joke, whenever we pronounce the one. Bills that way, this goes back to Pat's first year with the Chiefs. He ran a Madden league, and there was a great interview, which I try to retweet every year on the anniversary because it pops up in my feed, you know,
because yeah.
This is what you're tweeting 1 year ago. Pat set up a Madden league, and he was the Chiefs because he's the quarterback. So, you know, he actually said, like, I'm not going to play.
Yeah, right, of course.
If you don't let me be the Chiefs,
yeah.
which is such a power move.
Yeah.
But Tyreek was the Bills, and the way that he says the Bills is he calls them the Beals. I'm the Beals, and I'm trying to get myself traded from the Chiefs to the Beals, but Pat won't trade me. So he was trying to trade Pat Kelvin Benjamin.
And yeah.
First rounder.
Right.
And Pat said, nope.
He said, no, just give me the first rounder and keep Kelvin Benjamin.
Yeah, right. So we have the Buffalo Bills. We're playing this game on Monday afternoon. I think it's a 4 o'clock kickoff.
Arrowhead time, 3 o'clock your time.
3 o'clock my time, which is wild. I have a trial on Monday, and I'm hoping that I'm going to be done with it by then. At least maybe I'll have it to the jury. It's only a two witness case, so hopefully I'll at least be able to like pop it on in my office or something while I'm waiting for my jury verdict. It's a
make
very
sure you
strange
make friends
situation.
With the judge/bailiff.
That's right. It's a very strange situation, but the Bills and the Chiefs are both coming off their first losses of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs, obviously, it was a much closer game for the Chiefs. The Bills got blown out by the Titans, and frankly, I mean, they got embarrassed.
Yeah,
but this is a good matchup. I mean, it's going to be fun to see. Obviously, this was one that we kind of circled before the year started. You know, we thought we were going to be traveling to the East Coast on 3 days rest. That's not going to happen anymore. But this is just it's a different matchup than maybe we would have predicted even 5 or 6 weeks ago, because the Bills last year were an interesting offense, but kind of a gimmicky offense, and then an elite defense. Let's be clear, like one of the three or four best defenses in the NFL. This year, the Bills' defense has actually been pretty bad.
Yeah, they kind of flip-flopped.
Yeah, so the Chiefs right now are second in offensive DVOA, that offensive efficiency metric from Football Outsiders that we like so much. The Bills are fifth, which is frankly pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs, though, on defense are ninth. They're also top 10 in defense, top 10 in both offense and defense.
And that dropped after the Raiders game.
Sure. It did. Yes, it did. It dropped a spot. They were at eighth. Now they're down to ninth. The Bills are 21st,
jeez,
which honestly is amazing. I mean, this is a team with quite a bit of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And Sean McDermott is really a defensive coach and put together just a great defensive football team last year, got them into the playoffs, and probably should have won a playoff game had Josh Allen not, you know, peed down his leg.
Yeah.
But this is a good matchup. I mean, this is a good matchup for the Chiefs.
It's a super good matchup. It's fun. It's something that Mahomes and Allen have kind of gone back and forth a little bit on their arm strength stuff, and I doubt we will get a throw off here, but it would be kind of fun if the Chiefs got there early enough pregame for Mahomes and Allen to go out on the field and maybe stretch their arms out a little bit. You know, so far this year, Josh Allen has slightly but better numbers than Mahomes does in a lot of categories. He has 1,589 pass yards compared to Mahomes' 1,474. He has 14 touchdown passes compared to Mahomes' 13. He's been killing it. He's been doing really, really well. He has thrown three picks, two of which were in the previous game, and Mahomes has thrown one pick, which was in the previous game. So they both came into this previous week throwing one combined interception. I don't know if you've seen the one interception that Josh Allen threw before this week, but it was a jump ball against the Rams where the Bills receiver came down with it and then wrestled with the Rams or the Rams DB, and then in the end of the pile, the refs awarded the Rams. Bills fans were pissed. They were saying it was a one. It was an asterisk on the interception. It was pretty funny to me.
Sure, but he threw a couple legitimate ones.
But he threw some bad ones against the Titans. He looked rattled. He looked like there was a lot of pressure on him to go out there and keep up with Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, and he couldn't quite do it. So it'll be fun. The Bills are kind of. I like them. I find them fun to watch. I think that
they're very fun.
Any team that can dethrone the Patriots in the AFC East is a lot of fun. So I know, like, I've seen some Patriots fans on Twitter being like, all right, we're Chiefs fans this week. And I'm like, no, you go back to your corner. We don't need you. You know, I'm going to be a little upset if we beat the Bills just because it's going to make your jobs a little easier. But it's fun. It'll be a good game. I don't anticipate either of these teams playing as poorly as they did this previous game. So I think that it's going to be a well-executed, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Now, both defenses have a lot, a lot of bumps and bruises from their previous game. And I don't know if any of those are going to get solved this week, but I'm looking forward to a entertaining Monday afternoon game.
It's going to be interesting to see how the Bills attack the Chiefs, because our man Warren Sharp, who we hype a lot, if you're not following him, you absolutely should. Very, very smart man. You can learn a lot of football from him. He tweeted today that Patrick Mahomes this year against the Blitz, we know how good he was against Baltimore, but overall in the season has completed 70% of his passes for 9.8 yards per attempt against the Blitz. When teams do not blitz, he's at 62.1% completion, which is an 8% drop, and 7.1 yards per attempt. So 2.7 yards per attempt fewer when teams did not blitz. So when they're dropping guys in the coverage, when they're not bringing extra pressure, or when they're just bringing four rushers. The Bills blitz, Taylor, at the third highest rate in the league, 40.6% of the time. So this is really I don't know that I would say that they play entirely similar styles of defense to the Ravens, but one thing that both of those teams do a lot is blitz and play man, and the Chiefs shred those kinds of defenses. Yep. We saw Patrick Mahomes have essentially one game this year where it was perfection. It was probably the best game of his career. Uh-huh. And it was against Baltimore, the team that can't pressure without blitzing, and that blitzes at a super high rate. And Baltimore did blitz him. I mean, yeah. I asked the question before kickoff, like, is Baltimore really going to do what they usually do, which is blitz a lot? And they did, and they got absolutely crushed by it. I mean, he destroyed the blitz in that game.
And then the Raiders blitzed him for the second fewest blitz percentage in Mahomes' career and still managed to get the second highest pressure rate on him in his career. So that was a horrible, horrible turnaround for the offensive line. But it was also, I think a lot of that was that they didn't blitz, so they dropped a bunch of guys back, and he would sit back there. They were all covered. And then when he starts to run around and somebody can break off their block and go after him, I guess that's probably considered a pressure, even though it's more of like a coverage pressure than anything. But, right. But yeah, he has 126 rating against the blitz and 102 not against the blitz. And even more impressive to me, he's taken all six of his sacks this year under a normal rush. He has no sacks taken against the blitz. So it has never gotten home. It's just, I mean, he's phenomenal.
It's crazy to me that anybody would ever even attempt to blitz him anymore.
Right.
And it's also learned? Yeah, it's also crazy to me that he's still just 25 or, I mean, you always hear people say that you don't want to blitz an experienced quarterback, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, the Peyton Mannings, the Tom Brady's, the Drew Brees of the world, when they get into their wily veteran stage, you know, they hit 30, 31, 32, and then into the back half of their career, they've seen so many different types of pressures mm-hmm. and packages, and they know their offenses so well that they know when you're going to bring pressure, and they know exactly where they need to go to beat it. Well, Patrick Mahomes is already there, and he's been playing for three. This is his third full season in the NFL. I mean,
he has the physical gifts of a 25-year-old too. So not only does he have the mind that can beat it, but he has the physical gifts that can beat it.
The legs and the arm. Oh. And my God, the physical gifts were on full display last week against the Raiders. That's really the only thing. And honestly, we've talked about this before when we talked about the Tennessee game from last year, the regular season game that the Chiefs lost in horrible, mind-numbing fashion. It's always just, it's so sad when we lose highlights from games that we lost, because the highlights from this game, the Raiders game that we're now circling back to for some reason, they would have been legendary had this been a win. And frankly, had one of them counted, that throw to Tyreek was like the play of the year. I mean, that was,
oh,
that
ball dropped it
almost 70 yards in the air. Josh Allen eat your heart out into a bucket.
Right.
And it got called back on a very questionable holding penalty. It was rough. But if the Bills are going to stick to their usual game plan and blitz on Monday, they're going to get crushed. And do you really think Josh Allen can keep up with Patrick Mahomes in a shootout?
I'd like to find out, but it doesn't seem so. It definitely doesn't. I do have one more split for Pat against the blitz that I saw earlier this week that I loved, which is he has in his career, in his regular season career, he has thrown 18 interceptions and been sacked 49 times, okay, total, out of all plays. How many interceptions of those 18 do you think were against the blitz? I'll tell you that he's attempted 267 passes against the blitz and 990 in a normal rush.
I'm going to go with two against the blitz.
It is zero. He has thrown all 18 interceptions in a normal rush and zero interceptions against the blitz. And that's then of his crazy 49 sacks he's taken, I already told you that this year he has none taken against the blitz. I'll just say that it was 41-8 normal rush versus blitz.
So that's crazy. It's crazy.
He just dices. Somebody sends an extra guy and he immediately knows, okay, if that guy's coming from there, that means, oh, boom, I don't have any coverage over here. I'm going there. It's perfect.
I was going to write about this for our parent website, Sports Illustrated.
SI.com/NFL/Chiefs.
Which Taylor still contributes to. I have not been able to lately because my work and home life is insane right now.
You'll get back.
But I will get back to it eventually, but I will throw in this nugget. You know, Patrick Mahomes this year, not only is he shredding the blitz as a passer, but he's also doing so well as a runner. He's so clutch as a runner. He's picked up, these stats are a couple weeks old because I haven't updated them, but through the first 4 weeks, he had, I believe, 9 rushes on second, third, or fourth down. And he picked up 8 first downs on 9 rush attempts. It's crazy. I mean, that's an 88% success rate. And on the one that he didn't get it, he picked it up on the fourth down.
Sure.
Like with his legs. The Chiefs converted it in the Chargers game with a rush. I mean, he just is playing such smart football right now. It's crazy. The Chiefs are probably going to be without Sammy Watkins in this game. They are going to be Kelechi Osemele in this game. So they're a little bit banged up on the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, they're not going to have Le'Veon Bell in this game because he has to clear all the COVID protocols first. But I expect the Chiefs to score big in this game. And that just means we need a passable performance from a defense that you got to believe is really motivated to give you something, because last week they didn't give us much of anything at all.
No, and to go get it from Josh Allen, a guy that's another young up-and-coming quarterback. So we've seen this play out time and time again throughout Mahomes' young career, which is that every time he goes up against another young quarterback, everybody says, oh, here's the Brady Manning matchup we've been looking for. It's Jared Goff, and it's Deshaun Watson, and it's, you know, Lamar Jackson. Anybody that is any good at all at a young age, everyone's trying to shoehorn them into the next Brady Manning with Mahomes. And make no mistake, Allen's now being talked about in that light too. He's a young quarterback. He's killing it so far this year. And they're going to say, oh, here we come. Here we go. It's Josh Allen versus Patrick Mahomes. How many times are we going to see this matchup throughout their long careers? I mean, they'll love that stuff. So the Chiefs know that. The Chiefs know that he's a guy that they need to go out there and put in his place a little bit. And I'm not sure if they're going to be super successful against Josh Allen. I do think the Chiefs will have enough to win, but I think it's going to be something like 31-28. It's probably going to be a pretty close game.
I will say, I think the Chiefs can have success against Josh Allen. I think that I've already made it very clear what I think about this past week's performance.
Sure.
I don't even think that the Chiefs game plan against the Raiders was that bad. They clearly were geared up to stop what the Raiders traditionally have always done.
Yep.
And I guess if you want to give credit to the Raiders for like throwing a deep pass when they'd never do that, okay, great. Maybe they've just been playing the long con for 5 years.
Yeah.
For decades.
Yeah.
Derek Carr was waiting.
Carr was drafted.
this moment, if we were ever going to see Jace Frost come out of retirement, by the way, it would have been this week.
You're right.
But we didn't, because it's Derek Carr, and he got caught. He got busted. Boom. If you guys want the story on that, you can go listen to our back episode, Sports Illustrated's Trial of the Century. Yep, that's exactly right. It's going to be a good game, Taylor. What's your official score prediction? 31-28, good guys?
Yep.
I'm going to go 38-28, Chiefs. I think 28 for the Bills sounds about right, but I think the Chiefs put a little bit more on the board on Monday afternoon. We'll talk about it next week. It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom.